Hello and welcome to the Wolves Report online, Leicester, and thank you for joining us for episode 98, where tonight we will summarise the Bournemouth game, give the match and player analysis from Wolves 2-1 win over Luton Town, take your questions and look ahead to Saturday's game against Man City. Every week now, these boys have got the giggles. I have absolutely no idea why. It's our own Bonnie and Clyde. It's Nocky and Tyler, our club captain, supposed to be taking responsibility, Mark Nock. And our director of football, Chris Tyler. Thank you for joining us for this latest live episode. You can join in with the show on Facebook, Twitter and YouTube. And also a big thank you to those listening back on those platforms as well as Spotify. Straight into business, Nocky. Last Wednesday, Wolves lost at home to Bournemouth in what Gary O'Neill probably described as Wolves' worst performance of the season, where it finished Wolverhampton Wanderers 0, Bournemouth 1.
Yeah, it weren't very good, was it? I mean, we could have been four goals down in the first 20 minutes. I thought they were all over us. Senesi, Solanke, Cliver, Scott, they just found space all over the pitch and they were just picking holes in us. There seemed to be such a gap between the defence and midfield. I wasn't completely sure what shape we were actually playing. We seemed to be playing a four and then we dropped back into a three. It was just messy and it was all over the place. There's a lot of players for us who didn't look fit. And it was just a really poor performance. And I think we probably got away with 1-0, whether you take the VAR out of it or not. I think that they were far superior. And I couldn't have argued if it had been all over by half-time because they were just in full control of the game. It was a real disappointing performance. We couldn't get the ball to stick up front. We just looked so bored. And I know they weren't. I know that they're coming back from injury. At the time, I was frustrated because it felt like there was a bit of a lack of effort, but having a bit of time to reflect on it, I don't think that was the case. I think that the players weren't fit and they came at us very early with some quality play and we just couldn't cope with it. They just overwhelmed us. So really disappointing. In saying that, it's a really poor mistake by Max, which has allowed them to score. But, you know, we could have pinched a point out of it at the end. But, yeah, really, really disappointing evening.
No, Tyler, thank you, Nocky. Tyler, we've given Gary lots of praise over the season and we've cut him a lot of slack because of how wafer thin the squad is. I think on Wednesday, I think he tried to be too smart and I think, personally for me, that performance was as much on the manager as it was on the players.
Yeah, I think we talked about, had a bit of the West Ham aways about it, didn't it, really, where the players just didn't really know what was going on, did they? And the only surprise for me was how long it took to change it back, you know, to a bit more of a... And I know we're hybrid three and hybrid four, and we do swap it in and out of games, but we only really changed it back once we conceded, and that was the frustrating part for me. We could all see it was going wrong. We could all see we were getting overrun everywhere. And normally that's where he's been so good in potentially getting a player to feign an injury or whatever and get the group in and sort it out. But he just seemed to keep letting it happen. And I don't know if that was a hint of arrogance or, you know, stupidity. You don't want to say those words, but it was baffling because it just needed to be changed. And, you know, Nock is right. You know, we're talking about VAR again and potentially having a decent second half, but we were well off it and Bournemouth were excellent. And they're a good side. I think we said they're a pretty good team, aren't they? They've got some very good players and they were just too good for us on the day. Sometimes that happens. But Nock is right. They look tired. They look fatigued. Again, I don't think it was a lack of effort or commitment. I just think we got done by a brighter, sharper team on the day. But Gary got it wrong. And like I said, the only surprise was he didn't change it quicker, really.
Yeah, Gary's built up a lot of credit and say, I think it's only fair for balance that when it's wrong, you have to call it out. You can't just keep praising him and clapping him all the time. And he's not perfect. We're not perfect. The players aren't perfect. And I think he did say it was a disappointing performance and Wolves can do better. And I think he can do better that day. Whether that was he was so desperate to beat Bournemouth, because whether you like it or not, if any of us were returning to our old employer, you want to beat them, regardless of you saying there's no problem or whatever. Granted, it was a platform for him to go on and then he's now managing Wolves. Regardless, though, Gary would have really wanted to win that and that would have hurt him. So I just felt like it was a bit too overcomplicated. We didn't really know what we were doing. It looked like it was, as Tyler said, it was a hybrid back four, but it just didn't work. And one thing I would say, though, Nocky, is despite how some games have been poor, understandably, regardless of the situation, even if The tactics have been confusing. The whole team is still buying into it, and they never stop playing for the manager, even if what the standard was, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a given. That shouldn't be a pat on the back for anyone, that your minimum requirement is to put a bit of work, right, and effort in on the pitch. It was our worst performance of the season. I can't remember anything worse than that. Definitely in terms of the first half. I don't think I've seen a worse 45 minutes from Wolves this season. But they did improve second half, and I think they improved when they took Doyle off. I think they improved when they took Sarabia off. Chirewa gave us a little bit of energy. Didn't hugely affect the game, but he just seemed to give us a little bit of just a bit of that young, I'm just going to have a go at this kind of attitude. And I thought Doherty as well, I thought Doherty stabilised us a little bit and just made us a little bit more rigid. So we did improve in the second half, but we didn't create enough to really warrant getting anything out of it. We just kind of made things a little bit better for ourselves. And you know, on another day, the goal's not disallowed and we end up walking away with a point. And, you know, we're absolutely delighted with that. But on the balance of play over the 90 minutes, I think, you know, Bournemouth were comfortably the better side.
Yeah, I would totally agree. There's no question, Tyler, that Bournemouth were the better side. They looked a team that had a regular sort of 11 or 12. They knew their shape, they knew their plan. And almost like at West Ham away, as we mentioned earlier on, we almost played into sort of their hands because it just sort of, it completely suited them. So, frustrating as it was, unfortunately, we can't get away from it again. We have to talk about VAR. Now, I'm sick of talking about it. And everyone else is sick of it ruining the game. And I know you in particular, Tyler, some of the things that you've said, we said in private, about how much enjoyment it's taken away. I know you watch a bit of Solihull Moors and watch other games and how much more free you are to enjoy and celebrate those moments. But talking about that moment in particular, at the start of the season, it was said they're not going to at the start of VAR, he said that we're not going to re-referee the games. We're not going to interfere. We're not going to do it again. But you mentioned it on the group chat, Tyler. That's probably the worst one of the lot, because genuinely, I still don't understand how that goal's been disallowed.
No, nor do I. It's clearly re-refereeing it. That's what's happened on that occasion, and it happened at, you know, Villa Chelsea last night. And the argument for me is it's not even if you think it's a foul or it isn't, because I think you'd probably get a 50-50 split from most people on the definitely on the Villa one, maybe more so on the Wolves one with Cunha. But no, we've talked about it before. The referees just use your nouse. There's no complaint from anybody, not one Bournemouth player. Your dog's there, son. Have a nice kid. About time we brought some decent people on the show. But
best looking one on the show.
And if I'm a referee, you give the goal. I genuinely didn't even know what they were checking at the start, and I'm sure you boys didn't either, because it's just a nothing incident. It happens 100 times in football matches. He's gone just to really protect himself because he can feel the players about to, you know, push into him. Like the Villa Chelsea one, it's a tiny little nudge. If anything, he sort of just is off balance. They're re-refereeing the football match, which Howard Webb came out and said that's not what they're ever going to do and that's not what they want to do. And they've started to do it. And I tweeted last night, while they keep doing that, I won't be going to many more Premier League matches because I've just had enough, basically. And there's more and more people in the same boat, isn't there? And what do we do? Where do we go? I've got no idea. But it's just, I've just had enough, basically. But never in a million years should that goal have been chalked off.
The one thing that really confused me, Nocky, about it, they've obviously spotted Cunha, whether he's swinging his arm or whatever he does. The player who was involved with it didn't appeal. But the most frustrating thing is the player that did it to him clearly put two hands in his back and pushed Cunha first. So the original foul was the defender fouling Cunha. So how can you just pick and choose which foul you want? Now, nobody complained, nobody appealed. It made no sense whatsoever. Yes, if he catches him in the face, he'll probably get sent off, but he didn't. But the guy instigated the foul by putting two hands in his back first. So that's the original foul. If that's the original foul, you let them both go on and play on. We've not seen anything from any feedback from the PGMO or anybody about that, but I cannot understand how that is not a goal.
It's just the lack of consistency, I think, that's annoying me more than anything else. I mean, look, we were told it was for clear and obvious errors. No one's convincing me that's a clear and obvious error. Whether you think it's a free kick or not, it's not clear and obvious. So the consistency piece is what winds me up. I mean, if you look when we play Forest, Gibbs White, two hands in the back of Semedo, pushes him. It's far more contact there. And then he goes and scores the goal and it's not disallowed. So there's just so many different... There's just so many mistakes that they're making at the moment. I mean, Onana gets punished against Burnley for the exact same assault that he did on Kolajic. One's given, one isn't. And that, this is the frustrating thing. And, you know, there was some talk from I spoke to Jackie Oatley and she was saying it's a 96% correction in terms of getting it right. They're getting it right 96% of the times. And Jackie's one of the most intelligent people in football. There's no question about that. But I think what I'd like to see on that would be the detail behind it. How are we deciding it's 96% accurate? How are we doing that? Are we marking our own homework? Are we just classing the ones that we're actually checking? Are we classing the ones that we've missed? Or if we've missed it, does it not count because we didn't check it? I just think that they've tied themselves in knots with the whole system from top to bottom. They don't know what they're supposed to be refereeing. They don't know what they're supposed to be protecting. What do they leave alone? When do they get involved? When don't they get involved? And it's just such a mess at the moment, and no one seems to know what they're doing with it. And it is ruining the game. I'm with Chris now. I mean, the goal went in. Huang's goal went in. The first thing I thought was, right, who's offside? Who's committed a foul? Yeah. How's he going to stop it? And it was the same with the second as well. And it shouldn't be like that. You shouldn't have those spontaneous moments of emotion ripped away from you. I mean, you look at, you know, I've got no love for Villa or Chelsea, but Chelsea 2-0 down, and then a goal's disallowed for that, and you've taken away a fantastic moment in a football match, and the same with the FA Cup semi-final. It shouldn't be here to take away goals. It should be here to add to the entertainment of the game. And it's not. It's almost like a Bond villain now. It's doing all it can to ruin everything that's good about the game. And it's just awful to see. I'm just so disappointed with where it's gone. And I think we had a chat on here before, and I was worried this is where VAR would go from day one. And from day one against Leicester when we got punished, it's gone wrong. It's gone downhill from there, and it's just such a mess. And unless you've been it now, I don't see how you improve it.
Yeah, it's a real tough one because it's our beautiful game that we love, and those we've talked about it on air when Keith was on. It's that moment of ecstasy in a football match, like the Chelsea fans had last night on Saturday when they were celebrating what would have been an incredible turnaround, 2-0 down, looked completely dead, and you can see. Sometimes, but what someone put a really good tweet out. I think it was responded to one of the TalkSport reporters, and they said, if that was the other way around, would that nudge have been brought back for VAR and given a penalty?
No, definitely.
So if that's the case, then you can't have double standards, and this is what's killing it. It's the lack of consistency. If there is a level that you're delivering every week, you can take it. That's fine. You know where you stand, but. The grey area is huge now. There's black and white one side, and the grey area is enormous. And there seems to be so much flexibility for your own interpretation. It's driving fans absolutely bananas. But let's move on to a positive. Paul Wheeler says, "Your hair looks really nice, Ryan Lester." Thank you. And for those listening on the podcast, on Spotify, he's not telling the truth. One of my old friends there, well, still my friend and one of my oldest friends, Paul Wheeler, had 60's birthday last month. Well done, Paul. Let's move on to a positive and away from that game. Tyler, we may only say it's Luton Town, but it ended up Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Luton Town 1. A win back on the board. Something to build on. And just, Wolves were in real danger, if they weren't winning that, of going like almost a quarter of a season without a win. But there's a win back on the board. It means I win one of our bets. I'm probably going to lose the other one. But it ended Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Luton Town 1.
I know. Is it bad if I say I was begging for a Luton equaliser?
You nearly got one and all.
That was because you disliked the Forest, not because of me.
Is that bad? I only wanted to take some money off you, but yeah, it was better, wasn't it? It wasn't brilliant. It wasn't the heights we've got to, but when you get close to having your better team out, then you've probably got a better chance of winning more games than losing. And O'Neill was right. You know, having Huang and Kuna together... just such a big difference. Knocker talked after the Forest game about, look at the difference of us with Kuna in the side, we're a threat again. And now we've got Kuna and Twang in the side. And it's not a mistake. We look threatening. And O'Neill was right, wasn't he, about the first goal. He said, we don't score that goal if Twang's not on the pitch. Because we haven't got a nine, we haven't got a striker. We've talked about it till we, you know, blew in the face, haven't we? But, you know, I thought he played really well. I enjoyed Twang's performance. I've been critical of him before. I thought he was very good. I thought Boubacar Traoré was excellent again.
Yeah.
And again, we've come on here and said, why has he not had more minutes? Why has he not been playing? But I think he's earned his shirt the last, you know, couple of performances this week. And yeah, there were some positives again, you know. Disappointed again to not keep the clean sheet and let a sloppy goal in. And Rocker nailed it at 2-0. We should go for the juggler. It should be 3 or 4.
Well, I think we were wasteful, weren't we?
Yeah, we've let them creep back in the game. And, you know, luckily we didn't concede because I think it would have been unforgivable. But I still won't get carried away. Like I said today, I think you know, they're a poor side, aren't they? One of the worst probably to ever be in this league. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But you're right. Nice to win. Nice to bury a few demons. And we all just feel a bit better again, don't we?
It is a nice win, and people say it may be only Luton knocky, but a win's a win in the Premier League, and we can very much look forward again now, because if you can carry that run and you go into the end of the season, then and you start in the next season a whole negative thinking, well, when was the last win? And I can't remember, it was that long ago, I can't remember when, was it home to Fulham? The Wolves went to Fulham 2-1, yeah. And that feels like a long time ago now, so a bit of pressure off, but it's no coincidence, knocky, that, as Tyler mentioned then, when you get your better players back, this team are capable of much better than what they've been shown in the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, and I don't think the players who come back were particularly fit either. I don't think Cunha looks fit yet, although he was heavily involved in the game because he was physical and he was at the defender, which is something we've really missed in those attacking areas. I don't think he's fit. I don't think Wangi's fully fit yet either. But it's such a difference when you've got two players of that ability up front. I mean, Cunha wins the ball, plays it to Hwang, step over, cuts inside and finish. And that's just something that we've just not been doing over the last sort of 6 or 7 games, because we've had players who've come in and done their best in those positions, but they're just either too young to really affect games or they're not natural in those areas. So they can't put the ball in the back of the net in those positions. So it does make a hell of a difference. But in terms of the game, I mean, the first 15 minutes I thought we were poor. The last 15 minutes I thought we were poor. But other than that, I felt it was a relatively comfortable performance against what is absolutely a horrendous team. And Chris is right, they're one of the worst teams to ever be in the Premier League. And I don't think if Forest don't get another point, I think they'll still stay up, because I just can't see Luton picking anything else up. But you can only beat what's in front of you. And when you haven't won for 6 games, it's... you're going to be a little bit edgy, you're going to be a bit nervous. But I thought after the second goal, we had a little bit of swagger about us then. We started knocking the ball around with a bit of intent, and Semedo got himself into a good attacking area. And I think he's been probably our most consistent player this season, but he's also been consistent in the fact that he doesn't do much when he gets in the area. He snatches, or he doesn't get that final ball right. And he should have made it 3-0. And if that had gone in, I think there'd have been another goal or two in it for us. But they got one back, decent finish from Morris. But even after that, I never felt too concerned, because I just didn't think they had the quality to get a second goal.
Well, I got to say, I know it was only 2-1. I don't think, although we didn't pump them, I never really felt under that much threat from Luton. I thought Wolves controlled the game well, without the ball and with the ball. I thought it took them a little while to get going, but once Wangi had scored, I thought Wolves looked in full control. And particularly after the second goal, Wolves then sort of, the handbrake was off and they're playing with a little bit more freedom. I'd almost go as far as saying it was starting to be fun to watch then. But typically, I had a bit of luck. And you know what? Credit to Luton for going back in the time. There's a side that never gives in that's playing for their manager. And also credit to Rob Edwards for keeping Luton still within the conversation of staying up with 3 or 4 games to load. That's an incredible achievement. They may stay up, they may not. It looks tough for them. Everton at home on Friday night. So it would be quite entertaining if Luton did stay up. And of the three down there, I've got to say, boys, I would prefer Luton to stay up. But as long as it goes to the last game of the season, it'll be quite fun. Tyler, let's talk about Hwangi's goal. The ball over the top from Jose Sarr. He's hit it quite long. Cunha showed some real strength against a big centre-back. He's took a nice touch. He's gone back on himself. He's fed Hwangi in. He's done his traditional cut outside, cut inside and found the far corner. Hwangi Chan, fantastic finish.
Yeah, and it makes the goal against Bournemouth have ruled out even... you know, a bit harder to against. Again, that was a brilliant header. Not much has been said about that. It was an absolutely fabulous header from him, and we've just missed him, haven't we? And I'm not going to change my thoughts on him. I still don't think he does enough all-round play. I still don't think he gets involved well enough in build-up. But what you can't criticise is, in the box, he's lethal, isn't he? He's been lethal this season, and we've just missed it. And I think O'Neill came out and sort of commented him about him being our number 9, and he's definitely hurt that, hasn't he? You know, his finishing's been really, really good this season. And 11 goals, is it? With him and Kuna, first time we've done that. So it's hard to knock him, really. You know, like I said, I'd like to see more involvement in Lincoln. But then if he's your number nine and you can get Neto and Kuna and others involved, and if his job's putting the ball in the net and he keeps doing it, then who are we to criticise? So really good goal. Took it well. Got a deflection, but I think he earned that look after the disallowed goal in the week.
Yeah, that goal in the week, that header, it was Stephen Fletcher, Don Goodman-esque. The power and that header. I didn't think Quang had that in his locker. Nelson Semedo, like, he's taken an assist off him. Nelson, we need more of them. But that was a great goal in the week that was disallowed. Moving on to the second goal, there's a really good question about Huang that goes on the lines of what you've talked about as well, Tyler. Noki, going on to the second goal, I'm one of the guilty people here when they took the corner short. I wasn't shouting and screaming, but I thought, and I was like, why are you doing that? But it turned out to be a well-drilled move. It was three players involved in the build-up to it, the crossing, and a fantastic header from Toti Gomez. What was telling for me, Noki, is when they ran to the bench, I don't know who was taking credit for it, but there was someone on the bench that was taking credit. And it's nice when a team does that, because clearly it's something they've worked on. Great build-up and a great finish from Toti.
Yeah, it was nice to see us do something a bit different. I mean, usually we just swing it in the box, and saying that, we've got a really good record from set pieces, even though we seem to be absolutely wretched at them. So I'm not sure what's gone on there. But it was just nice to try something, you know, a nice ball out to Lamina, and he clips it in perfectly. And Toti's actually been held back as well. So to manage to get himself free and then nod it in with a really good header. It was a lovely goal. I thought both goals were worth going to the game just to see, because there were two real bits of quality in different ways. And I think it was obviously whoever had set up the set piece who went over to congratulate him for the system at work. So it's just nice to try something a bit different, and hopefully we'll do a little bit more of that going forward, because we do seem to be a little bit, we'll lump it in the box and see what drops, really. That's how it feels. But yeah, nice goal. And it was the game, you know, that was the game finished then, really, at that point. And it should have been a little bit more comfortable than it was.
Just before in between the second goal and Luton's goal, Tyler, it's probably the most freedom Wolves have played with. There was Joe Gomez, Boubacar, everyone was getting involved. Obviously, we had to make some subs, and obviously that slowed us down a bit. But the confidence was back. That was the team that was getting the results before all the injuries.
Yeah, it was. It was nice to see, you know, almost like stress-free football again, wasn't it, for a little bit? And the one touches were coming back, the flicks, the interplay. Yeah, it was much better, you know, what we got used to watching, wasn't it? And I think that's probably why it's been a bit harder than we thought, seeing these 5-6 games without a win, because I felt it had gone a bit stale, it had gone a bit backwards and sideways again, and the safe pass where, you know, when we had Neto, Kuna, Huang, we were lethal on the break, weren't we? And, you know, the interplay has probably never been excellent, but the pace we broke at, you know, teams were terrified of us, but we became the exact opposite, and we just came very easy to play against, didn't we? So it was nice to see just a bit of confidence flowing through again, wasn't it, really? And I think, yeah, the only thing is it would have been nice to get the third, maybe even the fourth, but certainly deserved the win. And, you know, it is a positive, because we've got a tough three games to finish the season, haven't we?
Absolutely. I think Nelson Semedo has never been great in front of goal. He goes on a fantastic run. He sits the defender down, and then he looks like knocking in front of goal from that moment on. It's not good. We're just a little bit wasteful from then. We have to do better in the future. But it was nice to be in that position when we could afford to miss it, and it didn't really affect the outcome of the game. Now, we're going to move on to the next section now, when we go through the team. We have a bit of debate internally whether people are still interested in this, because we seem to say a lot of the same things. But although there was a slight difference this week, because obviously Nelson played most of the game as a right centre-back and a three, and it was a midfield three, there will be a variation. But I'd love to see on your comments whether this is something you enjoy when we go through the team. It's a bit samey, because obviously we're doing the show because we enjoy talking it and about for you guys as well. So any comments on there, what you think about in terms of going through the show, whether you like it or not, put the comments on and we can talk through that. Noki, start us off with Jose Sarr. Well, we can talk to him a bit, really. He didn't really have a lot to do, and distribution-wise, I don't think it was too bad.
I thought there was a few that got wedged out of play, but he's, you know, the kick for Huang's goal, he set that in motion by playing it out to Cunha, so he was there when he needed to be there. And I thought there was a couple of moments. He made a decent save from Ross Barkley. He should save it, but it was still a decent save. Looking back at the Bournemouth game, he was brilliant in that match, and he made three or four absolutely fantastic saves. So in terms of Luton, I thought he was decent in what he had to do. I know you said his kicking was okay. I still think that is his, by far, his weakest area, because there's so many that just end up coming straight back to us, and we've conceded goals because we've given the ball away from a situation we don't need to do that. So I think that's an area he needs to improve. But all in all, wasn't hugely tested, but everything he needed to do, he did pretty well, and he was involved in the goal. So yeah, decent performance.
I'm not sure Jose Sarr will be a Wolves player next season, Knocker.
No, I don't think he will either.
If Gary O'Neill is the manager, not that he doesn't rate him, because Jose Sarr's shot-stopping stats are as good as anybody's in the Premier League. However, with the style of football we want to play, I'm not sure Jose Sarr will be there.
But if the Saudis are looking at him, you know that you're banging another 10 million on top of the asking price, aren't you? So if they can get the kind of money that's being touted, then... You maybe have a conversation around that, because, as you say, it's O'Neill likes to play by playing out from the back. He likes people to be comfortable with the ball at their feet. And as much as shot stopping wise, yeah, I'd agree. I don't think there's many better than him. He gives you kittens when he's got the ball in that defensive area. So I think he will be looking to upgrade the right word, maybe upgrade his to a player who can play a little bit more comfortable with the ball at his feet.
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned about Jose Sarr. He does frustrate me sometimes, and he's not a particularly great natural footballer playing left and right, but if he was Wolves keeper next season, I'm not going to be gutted about it, because he's doing great for us. And I do actually think under Cutler he's improved the last 12 months. I don't know what you guys think of that. I do actually think he's got better. Moving on to the back three, Tyler, obviously your favorite player scored, but I want to talk a little bit about Nelson Semedo, playing this sort of a hybrid right centre back of a three, occasionally bombing forward and swapping with Doherty. Interesting sort of situation, but I think it worked.
Yeah, I liked it, actually. I thought they worked quite well. And I know Tote is my favourite player and Matt Dockett is yours, Ryan. So we'll do their time. I'm with Nocky. I think Nocky got the word spot on. He said he stabilised us. And I'm not sure I want my players to be stabilised. We looked all right when he came on against Bournemouth, and we looked all right against Luton. And weirdly, I don't know why I'm saying it, but the Semedo and Doherty right-hand side seem to work quite well. And he's a clever footballer, hasn't he? I know you want to talk about Semedo, but Doherty's lost his pace. We all know that. But he's clever and he's smart, and they covered for each other quite well. Kilman started a bit shaky, actually, didn't he? I think Morris got him a couple of times, and you think, oh, here we go, he's going to get bullied again. But he came back into the game well. And Tote, yeah, I'll forever say he's got his feet on the wrong legs, but you can't knock his commitment, his desire, his will to win. And the goal was excellent, and he deserved it. So fair play to them. But yeah, I enjoyed Semedo and Doherty, actually. I think it worked well. But knock is right, that piece on Semedo, just score the goal or just square it for the tap in. It's that decision making with him, isn't it, in the final third. He probably knows himself he needs to work on, but for consistency and performance, probably my player of the season, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nelson's did all that hard work. He's burst through. He's dropped the defender like he's not there. The defender's almost like, when defenders give up because they know it's a tap-in, his head's dropped. And then Nelson's hit the weakest shot you've ever seen in your life. But Nelson's definitely up there with a contender for player of the season. I know he splits the fans. And like many people on Wednesday night, he was very poor. But it was a team performance that was poor, and they were all poor. So they can't be good every game. But Nelson, for me, I think he's in my top four or five players this year. We can probably do a show later on as it gets to the end of the season who that's going to be.
Four or five? Flipping out, mate. Can you spare him?
Yeah, that's it. That's it, mate. Four or five.
It's half the squad.
That's going to be a short show. Nocky, we talked about Matt Doherty. Tyler's touched on him. So just talk us through Matt Doherty and Ryan Aitnori. I'll start off with Ryan. Got honest, Ryan didn't look quite... I know he has that bit of sparkle, but that was probably one of his quieter games for me. And I'm not sure that was his own fault, because most of the play seemed to be going down the right-hand side. He didn't really get a lot of ball in the first half.
He didn't look fit to me. He didn't look like he was as mobile as you're used to seeing him. He wasn't doing some of those flicks and tricks that he normally does. And I think he was okay to play, but I don't think he was really fit. If we'd have had perhaps more options on that side, and it was a game that we weren't quite so confident we could win. I don't think he'd have played. So, yeah, he didn't look fit for me. But he did his job. He didn't do anything wrong. He just wasn't his usual self. In terms of Doherty, I did say he stabilised us, because I think that one thing we've been lacking on there is perhaps a leader, someone who's a little bit more vocal. And he is a bit vocal. You maybe don't see it as much, you know, because he's not screaming, shouting, but you can see him directing people and dragging midfielders across and securing the back lines. He's a decent player, and he's been around, and he understands the game. He understands his position, and he just gave us a little bit of composure down that side. And you're absolutely right. He linked up really well with Nelson. They covered for each other really well. He didn't pull up any trees. He wasn't, you know, he didn't look like he was going to score, but he just gave us, we just looked more balanced with him in the side. So for me, it was, you know, he was probably as good as anyone else on the day, really, in terms of what he needed to do.
He was solid. I mean, the Matt Doherty that was flying, that had a lot of freedom under Nuno, to the Matt Doherty now, are two very different footballers. But what I would say, though, now is I don't think he's given the freedom under Gary O'Neill to do what he did, because under Nuno, Doherty was allowed to get up with the forwards, and I think Bolly or Sace would come over and cover for him. And his biggest strength is his ability to make late runs in the box, to get on the far post. He was very intelligent at finding the right space at the right time. He's not allowed to do that now, so we're asking him to do things that aren't his strength. But I have to acknowledge, as Tyler said, it was a partnership that worked well on Saturday. As for Aitnori, he set his standards so high. When he is quiet now, you really notice, because before his injury, and even when he came back, the kid was absolutely flying. He was dropping people left, right and centre, and you thought, we've got an absolute worldie here. So when you set your standards that good, you do that well, when he's off, you tend to notice it. A first for Wolves and Gary O'Neill, with a three centre midfielders, all playing in centre midfield, Tyler. We knew it was going to be a physical challenge against Luton. Tough, physical, strong team. Ross Barkley being their star man, but I thought the Wolves midfield coped with him really well.
Yeah, I liked it. I think there was good energy in there, wasn't there? And Doyle's been getting the nod, hasn't he? And, you know, there's been debate over him in this group with certain people. But I've been saying for a few weeks, haven't I, that Boubacar deserved his run in the team. And he's taken it, hasn't he? I thought he came on against Bournemouth and was full of energy and changed the game. And he fully deserved his start on Saturday. And he was everywhere, wasn't he? I saw his heat map today, but he's good on the ball as well, you know. He can play, and I'm liking what I'm seeing from him at the moment, really. And I think you forget how young he is as well, you know. So when you've got him and Gomez, you know, two young lads still learning the game, they did really well, really. And I thought Lamina was, you know, solid again, wasn't he? Just big, strong, not, you know, not letting people get the better of him. But like we've talked about, I'd fully expect them to win a midfield battle at home to Luton. So, you know, we just need to be aware of that. But Barkley's someone I'd sort of look at snapping up. I think we talked about it on the group. You know, he's 30. Yeah. He's matured now. He's that different player that we haven't really got in centre midfield. So I'd be sort of all over him, really, if it was me. But no, I thought the three did well, and a lot of the energy, a lot of legs in there. And I think we might need those on Saturday at Man City, won't we? So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw the three again, really.
Yeah, I felt it was a dress rehearsal for the Man City game. Obviously, it wasn't treating it that way. But we know we can't play Doyle because he's playing against his parent club, and technically he's still a Wolves player until he signs permanently, so you can't face your own club. I felt like it was a dress rehearsal. And those three, they might get technically beaten in a footballing battle, but in terms of stopping, you're not going to come up against three Premier League midfielders who are as mobile, as strong and as robust as those three. So, but they'll certainly be tested on Saturday afternoon at 5:30 against Man City. That'll be a test and a half. Mocky, we had a front two. Cooney was allowed to drop a little bit deeper. Quangi more of the number nine. And it just worked. When you've got those two up front, when you've got pace, when you've got someone that can hold the ball and link, it sounds really simple, but when you've got players with strength and pace, Wolves look a completely different team.
Yeah, I think Wang maybe doesn't always get the credit that he perhaps deserves. And he makes some really clever runs. He got in behind I think it was in the first half, he got in behind and there was a ball play through to him and he's one-on-one. And it's a poor finish, but he's worked himself into that position. And then the goal, I thought, was an excellent finish. They link up well. They've got a good understanding. You have got Cunha, who likes to drop a little bit deeper so he can pick the ball up and drive through midfield. But he's always looking for Hwang, and Hwang's always likely to give him an option, because whatever your thoughts on him, he never stops working. He never stops running, and he's always pulling players out of position. He's always driving into the corners and then looking to make that run. And it's not, you know, it's not always the right decision, but he's always available to you. So I'm pleased that he's back. He should have scored 2-2 because, you know, we know how good the header was, and I don't think he should have been ruled out. So if he gets back into form for the last sort of three games of the season, he could get himself a couple more goals, because I think he's probably quite an underrated player in terms of what he offers you on the pitch. So really, really good for him. And I think with Cunha as well, he's not... I still don't think he's fit. I still think he's a way off, but he just has those little bursts of quality where he really affects the game and creates something for you like he did with the goal. So great to have them both back. Lovely to see them both playing together as well. And hopefully we can keep that going for the end of the season.
Absolutely. Cunha's just on the ball. He's got that bit of class about him, hasn't he? He's not the biggest of guy, but he's got the strength. His strength he showed to set Hwang
in. He looks Brazilian, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he just looks Brazilian on the ball.
He looks so composed, yeah. He links it nicely. He's got a good range of passing. He's got a nice trick to beat a player. Wolves are so much better. And I know we questioned it at the start and wasn't sure, but although he's come back from injury, you can see there's a £40 million footballer there. And when he's flying, the hat-trick away at Chelsea, fully fit, he's such a good player, and he seems to love it at Wolves. And hopefully that will continue into next season. That's the roundup on the latest player analysis from Wolves' 2-1 win against Luton Town. This is episode 98 of the Wolves Report. Chris Tyler-Martinock and myself, Ryan Lester. Let's move on to some questions. I mean, we're sticking on the same subject, but let's talk about it. Sean asks, with Cunha and Chani back, will Gary O'Neill explore the idea of playing Ryan Aitnori alongside them in a three for a better reflection on him as in a more attacking role? Now, I absolutely agree with that, and I'd love to see it, but I don't think we should start it next week, Nocco.
I don't think so. If he had more options to play left wing back, it may be something he considers, but I'm not sure he's 100% on Hugo Bueno, so I don't see him doing that. I do think going forward, Aitnori is an attacking player. I think he's wasted as a wing back because of what he's able to do. So I could see him ending up in a number 10 if he's still at Wolves next season. Then I think there'll be maybe a little bit of experimenting in pre-season. But I think when you've got Liverpool and City coming up, I don't think you're going to play with it too much, especially when we know how dangerous they are in the wide positions. And we know that we'll probably have Salah attacking us down that side. He did a job on him before, so I don't think he will do that. I expect it to stay as it is. You're on mute, bud.
Yeah, good job I did that. The dog was snoring in the background. I didn't want to hear, so... He's snoring. He's had a big walk and he's sleeping now. Sean, thank you for being part of the Wolves Report. Paul has got an officiating question, Tyron. I think you're the man to do it because you're living the officials at the moment. With semi-automated offside being introduced in the Premier League next season, my question is, what is the linesman's job now? That's a really good question. However, I believe, as far as I understand, it's only going to be used for tight calls. So they'll continue when it's obvious, and for fouls and for throw-ins and stuff like that.
Yeah, because that's worked with the fouls, hasn't it? The clear and obvious stuff. So yeah, we'll do that again. That works. We know that system works, don't we?
I think Nocky wants to answer it by the sounds of it, but
go on, Nocky.
It's just a joke, isn't it? I mean, what do they do now? There's no point in being there now. I was watching the Villa game, and I mean, Jackson must have been 5 yards offside at one point, and they play on, and then
someone's going to get injured badly for no reason whatsoever.
It's wasting 30 seconds. It's pointless. Just put the flag up, put it up and get it right or wrong. But obviously they'll still be throwing some corners, won't they? But yeah, apart from that. But we saw it today, didn't we, with Michael Oliver. Sorry to go off a little bit.
Go for it. That's what we're for.
How he's not given that penalty when Declan Rice has booted.
Followed him in the bag.
Gary Neville, gods, and he said straight away, penalty. Michael Oliver is 5 yards away with a clear view and doesn't give it. And it's the same with linesmen. They're just not giving them now, are they? And oh, I don't know, we talked about it earlier, but to answer the question, it's going to be throw-ins and corners, isn't it? There's no pressure on them now to get the decision right or wrong with offside. So
The job's redundant, isn't it?
So I was just saying, I do think it's probably the only positive. If it's used as it has been in the tournaments that we've seen, it should eradicate.
It's quick and accurate.
However, I'm still old school, and the goal that Tottenham scored today, and Max Kilman's goal the other night, and the goal that Coventry scored, for me, you know, you're talking toes, aren't you? And that's not what offside was brought in for. Offside was brought in to stop goal hanging. So I'd like to see Arsene Wenger's, you know, wants to trial it, that almost daylight argument. Because where's like you said earlier, where's the fun? Well, you know, we're chalking off goals for millimetres.
Yeah, absolutely. Football is an entertainment sport. And we're at the stage when we're looking for a reason to disallow for a goal as opposed to looking for a reason to give a goal. We pay our money, whether you're paying 30 quid as a away fan, whether you're paying 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 quid as a home fan across the country, we're going to be entertained. Yes, you're there with the mates. When you're in the stadium, I want goals, I want action. I don't want people have the opportunity to take that way of fun away from us, which they are at the moment. And it's become so forensic. And just going on to this question, Paul, you've set us all off. A great question, by the way. I think, and the referee today, I quite liked him, to be honest. I think he's one of the better referees, Tyler. But if he's not giving that penalty, it's showing that people are afraid to give a decision and they are relying on the technology. And that should not be the case.
How's he not seen that today? And it's the same as the Villa-Chelsea game. The referee had the clearest view of that decision and he felt...
He was stood there watching it.
He felt it wasn't a foul. Then his mate's in his ear saying... I think it is a foul. And I'd have loved last night or any time the referee goes to the monitor and, you know what, I'm backing my decision. I don't think it's a foul. Play on. And I don't know. It's gone, hasn't it? But how he's not seen that today is incredible.
At what point, though, then? Because not all the officials are bad. And credit, by the way, yesterday, the official at Wolves, if someone can put his name out, it escapes me.
It was cool, wasn't it?
I thought he had a really good game. I didn't have any problems with that yesterday. I thought he was, well, whether my standards have dropped and I'm not, but I actually thought he had a good game yesterday. I didn't have any problem with that. There wasn't a lot of controversy. I think he was reasonably consistent. It wasn't a bad game from him. And yeah, I thought he was consistent throughout, but all this technology is taking the ability off and the responsibility away from the guys who are paid to do it. And it's just... You're making it so black and white. It's just spoiling it, Tyler, isn't it? It's so frustrating.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's the more people. You know, there will be people that don't renew season tickets and that pick and choose their games now because they've just had enough. And, you know, we went to Burnley, didn't we, Knocker? And I didn't celebrate the equaliser because I thought Aitnori was offside. And it's taken that away. For me, it's taken that away from the game. And that's the saddest part for me.
In the near future, I have been reaching out to people. We are looking to do a space on VAR. I'm trying to do a space with some fans of other podcasts to have a chat about it, to try and raise a bit more, see if we can make a little bit more noise. Because at the moment, three guys here, we all met from loving our football team and our experience has been ruined. And I know a lot of people who I speak to on Twitter as well feel the same. So I'm not sure how much longer it continue. Paul, thank you so much for... talking about the lines when you set us all off talking about VAR and all kinds of things. Noki, moving on to Shane's question. My question is, which players must stay for next season? Well, we'd like to keep all of them, but that's not possible.
I'd like to see Cunha. I mean, I'd like to see most of them stay, but I think everyone's potentially for sale if the right price comes in. I don't think anyone's bulletproof. I'd like to see Cunha stay. I'd like to see Lamina and Gomez stay. Aitnori, I'd probably like to stay because I think he could become a bit of a versatile player for us. But I think we're going to have to sell two. I feel like there'll be two of the bigger hitters go. So I think you're talking between Kilman, Cunha, Aitnori, Neto, I think will go. So I think there'll be a couple that have to go. I'm not too bothered who it is, to be honest with you, as long as we invest the money back into the squad and rebuild. If we're looking in terms of who's our most important players as it is right now, you'd probably look at Aitnori, Cunha, Gomez and Lamina for me. They're the ones who kind of stand out, but they're also probably the players you make the most amount of profit on, so they're the ones most likely to go. So it's horses for courses, really, at this stage.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, it's such a tough It's a great question, Shane, by the way. Thank you for being part of the show, Tyler. It's a tough one to answer, but I could see Jose Sarr going. I think Wolves will make a good profit, signing for about 7.5 million. If he's going to Saudi, maybe get 15, 20 to profit on him there. Max Kilman, there's another article tonight, I think Talking Wolves shared an article from somebody who said Max Kilman's on the Man United shortlist for a centre-back again. That's a big move for Max. I'm surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. But for me, the obvious one is Neto. I don't see Neto being a Wolves player. I think, amongst things, I think there is some kind of gentleman's agreement that he's probably gone. So I'd say it's probably Neto plus one or two. So if it was me, I know you're saying, Shane's saying, which players would you keep? But it makes it easier to say which ones you think will go. Jose Sarr, Kilman and Neto. Tyler, are you in a grip? Would you say those three?
It's an easy question for me to answer. I think it's Kuhn. I mean, Doc, I think it's Kuhn. Kuhn is the one that I'd be building my team around. He's the one player that's got the X factor, the quality. I think you can replace all of the others, arguably, apart from Aitnori, just because he's a bit of an enigma. I love Gomez and Lamina, but what I'm trying to say is they're midfielders. They're the engine room. I think you can replace those. I don't think you can replace Kuhn. I genuinely don't. For a team that's bottom half of the Premier League, for me, he's irreplaceable. And I'd be building the team around him. And I think he's that good. You know, I think he's far too good for us, you know, genuinely. But I think the fact we paid 45, 50 million, it's going to be tough to sell him for profit, isn't it? So he'd be the one, to answer Shane's question, that I'd really want to start. And that I'd be building my team. And I'm with Docky, the others, give or take. You can't not sell Max Kilman for £35 million because he costs 40 grand. Do you know what I mean? If you're doing basic business maths, you can't not do that. So one with Nocky, I'm not too fussed who goes as long as it's invested properly.
Absolutely. And we can see this group of players, regardless, are all playing for the manager. You'd expect if that recruitment continues, they'll be playing for the manager anyway.
Yeah.
Just a question that sort of made me, Shane's questions made me think about this. So let's say Max Kilman goes then. Are we saying that probably Cunha should be Wolves captain next season because of his influence, or would it be Mario?
It'd be Mario for me. I think Cunha's a player who'll affect the game without needing the armband. It's a pressure he doesn't need. I think Lamina's the most natural leader in that team for me, so it'd be an easy switch across.
Great stuff. Shane, thanks for your question and being part of the show. Going back to what we said earlier on, what we discussed, Jonah asks, do you think Hwang is better suited for the central role alongside Cunha instead of out wide on the wing? We all know he doesn't contribute heavily in and around, but makes good runs. And I think this, we've been saying this for a long time. Give Hwang the ball in the box, he's the best at the club at it. There's nobody better. That chop inside and finish, there isn't anybody better. He seems to find himself there. For me, Hwang, the further back he goes when he gets the ball, it's almost like the more he deteriorates in terms of what he can do. I want Hwang on the halfway line now. Against Luton, granted it was Luton or not, the runs in behind allowed Wolves to keep getting up the pitch, the threat. Yeah. And they're physical, strong, fast centre-backs. Yes, they've let in a lot of goals, but these are big, strong lads who've got a lot of pace. And it gave them a run around the whole game and it allowed Wolves to get up the pitch. So yes, Jonah, I know I've criticised him, but you can't argue with his goal record. I want him as high up as possible. I want him on the end of crosses. I want him on the shoulder of the centre-backs. I don't want him coming deep. That's Cunha's job. Cunha can come and link, drop a shoulder, 1-2. Hwang, I want that being that ball in behind every time. Tyler?
Yeah, it's almost potentially got the makings of a bit of a partnership, hasn't it? Because they do complement each other quite well. Who's to say O'Neill might not want to look at a 4-4-2 next season or a 3-5-2 like it was the other day? You know, it's different options, isn't it? But they complement each other well. You know, Cunha, like I said, you give him the freedom. He goes where he wants. He does what he wants ultimately. I'd build the team around him. But I was sort of thinking about who's Hwang one that I'd let go. But the more I think about it, the more I'd probably want him to stay, you know, not just for those commercial reasons.
Good God, what a turnaround.
I know, but
see, like that, okay.
But 11 goals, he's close to prolific in this league now, isn't he?
If Wolves have a chance, who do you want it to fall to?
Yeah, you want Hwang in the box. Yeah.
While we're in that market of not being able to spend 30, 40, 50 million pounds on a striker, he does the job, doesn't he?
Absolutely. I want him in the box. I want him around the penalty spot. I want him at the far post. I don't want him linking the play. I want him the guy on the shoulder. And that will make defenders be honest. You know, they're either really going to trust their high line or they're going to have to tuck in and let us play because he's got the legs on most people. And credit to him. You know, I mean, he had a bit of a quiet spell after his injury. But up until his injury, he was having a great season. And he's running off the ball yesterday. It was fantastic. He didn't do a lot with it, but when he did, he scored. So credit to
him. There's no doubt in my mind, if it wasn't for that injury, he's probably on 15, 16 goals as a minimum, which is a fabulous return, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and what a turnaround he's had. And we have to, I think we'd all probably written him off. But credit to Gary, credit to Hwang. And he's done really, really well. So, yeah, I hope long may that continue. Moving on to Kato asks, great show, Ryan. Thank you very much. Now that Boubacar showed his metal, where do you see Doyle fitting in? Well, and I know Doyle's a player that really splits...
Up to this one, Ryan, please. I'd like to hear it.
It really splits the opinion of the pundits on the show. So I'll bring you over to our club captain, Mark Nock.
I'm not Doyle's biggest fan, to be honest. No, I'm not his biggest fan. I don't think he contributes as much as he should. I think if everyone's fit, he doesn't make the team. You can see the impact Boubacar's made, and he should have been in the team earlier than he was, in my opinion. I think Doyle will come on, he'll hit a few decent balls, but I don't think he's strong enough in midfield. I don't think he's particularly quick. I don't think he's solid in the tackle. I don't think he offers enough at this level. And City don't make a lot of mistakes when they let players go. And the fact that we can pick him up for $4.5 million, for me, there's a reason for that. So I think you've got to sign Doyle at that price. You'd be mad not to. He's a young lad who could improve and could do well. But I kind of almost see him going down the Joe Hodge route, if I'm being totally honest. I think Boubacar takes his place now, and I think he keeps it because he's offered a lot more in that area than Doyle has. But that's not to say Doyle can't improve, because he is a young man and he's still learning his trade. But I just think I've not seen enough from him to affect enough games for him to be consistently in that place. And if you've got Lamina, Gomez, Boubacar and Doyle all fit, I don't think Doyle makes the 11.
It's a great question, and it's a committed answer. He might be right, he might be wrong, but it's a great answer.
I've been wrong several times, mate, so I'll just add it to the list.
What I would say, well, we've only got to look at Gary O'Neill to find out about that one.
But yeah, exactly.
But to offer some balance up, what I would say is when Mario was away for family needs, I think Doyle really stepped up, Tyler. I think in those few months then, he stepped up. I mean, we was at Brentford, fantastic equalising goal. I think Doyle really stepped up there. He has dropped off, understandably. He's been asked to play wide left. He's been asked to play in here, there and everywhere. He has dropped off, there's no doubt. But I think he deserves credit for his mid-form season when we were short.
Yeah, I like him more than Nocky does. But
really?
I do get where Nocky's coming from. And I think he was likened to Neves by certain people. But what that says is in the way he plays football. And I think Gary O'Neill prefers people that have got a better engine, get around the pitch quicker, close people down quicker. We've seen that with his forward play, and I think he's probably started to realise it now in midfield as well. And I like Doyle. I certainly think, you know, like Nocker said, you buy him for that price. No brainer. And again, you forget how young he is. What, 21, I think? You know, he's got time to get better. But I think O'Neill likes dynamic footballers, and he doesn't fit in that category at the moment. And I think that's why we're seeing Boubacar. And like we said, I'm all for it. Give him the next three games. Give him a good pre-season. Let's see what he can do. He was signed with a lot of potential, wasn't he, Boubacar? So hopefully he can start to show some of it.
I think the way we play, I don't think it helps Doyle. Because he's probably the right player at the wrong team because of our system and our setup. If you were to put him at a team who has plenty of time to let a technical player play... Now, if he was in City's midfield, you'd look at me and you think there's a really good player there, because he'd have players around him who can hold the ball. He'd have a little bit more time to be dynamic and pick that pass and show that technical ability that he's, you know, we know that he's got. But at this Wolves team, we haven't got the quality to be able to do that. We haven't got the midfield that will allow that to happen because of the way that we play, because of the way that we attack the game. So it's similar to Sarabia. Sarabia's a quality player. We know he's a quality player, but he's at the wrong club for him to be able to really show that because of the way we play. So I'm not writing him off as a footballer, because I think there is a good player in there. I just think that for Wolves at this moment in time, he's probably the right player at the wrong time.
Great answer. It is very much, and Gary does adapt to the opponents, and he's very much horses for courses. Some teams play the same every week. You know what Man City are going to do. You know what Villa are going to do. You know what certain teams are going to do. They've got an identity of how they play. Wolves don't. We have a little bit, but we seem to change it quite a lot. And I know that's been probably mainly dictated by injuries for the last 2 months, but we don't have a consistent setup. But again, I want to credit Doyle for the mid part of the season when he did step up. And I think that started away at Bournemouth when he came on, and his influence in that midfield then completely changed the game when the Wolves were a goal down and changed. So I want to give
Doyle 3 games.
Yeah.
We talked about that, maybe we talked about the modern era now. We talked about Martino now being a finisher before he left, and he's the sort of player that if you've got 1 or 2-0 up, you can bring on and finish the game, the game out. He's not, he's not dynamic. And when we had Neves, we played a system that was basically built around that type of player. Now we're playing on the break and with pace and dynamism, and he's just not necessarily suited to that game. But like, that's not his fault.
But in modern football, £4.5 million, you know what, he's probably started 15 games for Wolves and come on as a sub in probably another 15 or 20. £4.5 million, no brainer. And I could do with one of those Brentford goals again soon, because we haven't got any outside the box in the league. 3 games to finish that. Only got to go to Anfield and Man City. No big deal. We're saying the best still last in the questions. Thank you for everyone for being part of the Wolves Report this evening. The latest question from Paul asks, what fancy dress are you wearing for Anfield? We're all going to go to Anfield, Paul, and pretend to be a podcast. So, yeah, we've been doing that all year. Thank you for being part of the show. This has been episode 98 of the Wolves Report. Chris, Tyler Martinock, and myself, Ryan Lester. Nice 2-1 win against Luton. Looking a little bit further at the table, Wolves head to Manchester on Saturday for the late afternoon kickoff to face the current European and Premier League champions. Now, I watched that game today, and Man City probably played the worst I'd seen them play in a long time, and it was still quite easy for them. I hope they play like that again on Saturday, but it's going to be tough. Tyler, this is a massive ask for Wolves to get anything next weekend.
Yeah, but, you know, just nothing to lose is they'll go there and just try and impact the game and try and play a little bit. And
I thought Forest were brave today, you know. I thought Forest were really brave. And I thought we'd better finish. Chris Wood should have had a couple of goals today. There wasn't half chances. There were tap-ins. Yeah. So yeah. Forest bravery, they weren't rewarded for that. And great, the better teams take those chances.
City give you chances, don't they? They're not the machine they were. I mean, they're still formidable, but they're not quite the machine they were. And they do give you chances. And like we've talked about before, they'll let us play, won't they? They won't care about us. So I'd like to think we can go there and cause some problems with Aitnori, you know, Cunha and Huang, but they'll be too strong. They'll have too much for us. You know, we can't keep a clean sheet, can we? So we're going to lose the football game. But, you know, like we talked about, we haven't been battered this season. No one's given us a right good hiding. And
now you've done it.
That continues.
Nocky, talk me through your preparations for Manchester City v Wolverhampton Wanderers.
I'll probably just rest everyone, if I'm being totally honest, really, for Palace, because I don't think we can compete with Man City. I mean, you want to play City at the start of the season. You don't want to play them at the end, because they turn into a machine and they've got 7 or 8 games left, especially when they know they've got to win every game in the Champions. So the quality's there. Haaland hasn't been in form. He comes on within 5 minutes. He's picked the ball up, beat the defender and slotted in. So I'm with Chris. I think they'll just be too strong for us. They'll give us opportunities, and I think we'll make the game a challenge for them. I think we'll be physical. I think we'll make it difficult for them in midfield. But the ball just keeps coming back against a team like this, and eventually they get it in the net. And I'm a little bit worried that if we give an early one away, it could be a very long afternoon. But I think it'll just be a professional job by City. I don't think they'll overexert, but it was going to be a long afternoon.
Yeah, I watch a lot of football. We all do, probably an unhealthy amount of football, but watching Man City today, they were probably at their weakest. They were at their weakest.
Nocky had a sneaky as well, I think.
There's no sneakies today, son. They're out the window.
For those listening on Spotify, Greg Hitman's put a 1-0 Cunha Ryan? Maybe not this weekend. they were at their probably, I mean, I don't want to say they're at their worst because Man City never stink, but they were at their most unfluent, stiff and vulnerable today, and they still won 2-0. Forest, Chris Wood could have had two or three goals today. And that's not an exaggeration for anyone that's not watched the game. Mm-hmm. Chris Wood missed some absolute sitters. He just scored them against Wolves because that's what he does. Yeah. But he had an absolute stinker today. So, but you know what? It's football and funnier things have happened. I'm not sure what happened next weekend, but we've already won there once in the past, haven't we? So let's find out. Saturday afternoon, Wolves head to Man City. So we'll go on to our predictions. Go to Mr. Positive first, and our director of fun and gamesmanship, Mr. Chris Tyler.
I'm with Nocker. I think they won't overexert it, and I think it will just be probably 2 or 3 nil City. As long as Nunes doesn't score, we're not bothered, are we? So I'll say 2-0.
Oh, no, that'd be horrible.
2-0.
I'm going to go, I've got a bit of a sneaker, you know.
Good God.
No, I fancy us to score first, actually. I think we'll lose the game.
That's
I think we'll lose 3-1, but I think Cunha puts us a goal up.
There we go. So it will be 1-0 Cunha at some point. Is that what you're telling me?
For about 60 seconds, yeah.
I'm going to go with Man City 0, Wolves 1 and Matheus Cunha. This has been episode 98 of
the Wolves Prediction.
Thank you so much. It's been episode 98 of the Wolves Report. Thank you, as always, to my two pundits, Chris Tyler and Mark Knott, for giving up their evening to come and talk some absolute waffle with me and make my waffle sound even worse. You can watch this back on YouTube, Twitter, listen back on Spotify, and also watch on Facebook as well of the Wolves.